The last time I was talking to you, you were heading off to Connemara.
That's right, I was. It was that long ago, wasn't it? We were heading to Connemara for a gardening course, and we had lovely weather.
Yeah.
It hasn't been too bad since. Bit of frost, which isn't good for the gardeners, for the plants, for some of the plants in the garden.
Yeah.
But overall, not too bad.
I see my own wife put on the garden, but all the weeds are up now in the garden.
Oh, yeah.
So she put something to bring on the weed, to bring up the weed, the weeds.
Bring up the weeds.
Yeah. And then we can kill them, is that it?
Yeah. I mean, you're always going to have weeds.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
But there was some stuff, Karen, sorry, that was sprinkled on our lawn that actually brought the weeds up.
Yeah. Well, what you might put on the lawn is a combination of a fertiliser and a weed killer.
Yeah.
Now, when you apply that to the lawn, it's feeding the grass. And the way those weed killers work are through hormones. And they often appear to be helping the weed at first. But the hormones give such a growth boost to actually the weed plants, but not the grass, that they actually grow like mad, but they burn out.
Okay.
So it might look at very first that she's encouraging the weeds, but actual fact, what will happen probably within a few days is those weeds, which look to be growing very strong, will start to kind of crinkle in their leaves and burn a bit, and they'll die off.
Okay, so should we not pick them?
No, leave those. And even with cuttings from the lawn, the first couple of cuts after applying a weed killer like that, don't put them in around plants or anything like that, because the weed killer could affect other things too.
Okay. This is the first time that Kieran Burke has sat in front of me and gave me some information here in front of me, a few little kind of pointers. And the first thing here, and I was like, what in the name of God? Maybe this is the wrong sheet he gave me. What's this got to do with gardening? And so we're talking about what happened on April the 14th, 1916.
April in 1916, yeah. If you say 24th of April 1916, if you say that to most people, they won't have an exact idea. But of course, if you say Easter 1916, that's what happened then in Irish history.
Yeah.
Well, of course, was the Easter Rising.
Yeah. Okay, and who was the most prominent woman of the Easter Rising then?
Well, if you ask people, most members of the public, say, well, like, who took part in the Easter Rising, they have the signatories of the Rising and all the men involved. But there were women involved too. Mm. And the most prominent woman involved was Countess Constance Markovitch.
Who was she?
Who was Constance? Well, Constance Markovitch was born in Dublin, but her family were from Sligo, the Gore Booth family. So she was Constance Gore Booth, born in 1868. And in 1900, she married a Polish count, Count Kazimir Markovitch.
Okay.
And that's how she got her title as the Countess Constance Markovitch.
Now, the all-important question, what would Countess Markovitch got to do with gardening?
Right, what has she got to do with gardening? Well, she's most famous, of course, for her role in the 1916 Rising and the whole kind of nationalist movement of around that era and the War of Independence, etc. She's also has fame for being the first elected female MP to the British House of Parliament, although she didn't take her seat. And in the provisional government, she was Minister for Labour.
Oh.
So it was actually Ireland's first minister, female minister.
All right, there's one
in
for
the very
you.
First Ireland provisional, Sinn Féin Dáil, in the before independence. Now, but her, what has she got to do with gardening?
Yeah.
Well, in 1909. In February 1909, she started writing a gardening column for the publication Ban na Héireann. And she started writing this column for about 14 months. So she finished in March 1910. And in her first article, she explained, I'll quote her, "I'm going to give you a few simple hints to the women who wish to make the most of that little bit of their native land that falls to their share in this life."
Is that the way she spoke?
I would imagine so.
You know.
So this is her background would have been growing up in this large country house, Lissadel, near Ben Bulbin in County Sligo.
Yeah,
so well-known garden. And there were also, it's a place where there is a great garden.
Mm.
So as growing up as a young girl, she would have been exposed to lots of gardening. She would have seen the house being supplied with fruit and vegetables, but not just the fruit and vegetables, but also beautiful plants.
So is this where she would have experienced her, well, I suppose, you know, got her experience in gardening?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, she would have seen it. From reading a bit about her biography, she was, as a young girl, she was quite appalled by inequalities in society. And so I could well imagine her being kind of following the gardener around. She seemed to get on very well with all the staff on the estate. And I could imagine growing up, she was probably quite keen even to muck in into the gardens a bit and learn from the gardening staff. And her articles have a lot of really good gardening information. And when you look through it, they're kind of done on a seasonal basis. Once a month, the articles came out.
Where were they published in?
It was a publication called Ban na Héireann. So, if you like, it was sort of a nationalist publication for the women of Ireland.
All right.
And actually, in her first article, she writes about buying local. Right, and okay. She impresses upon people about buying plants. And she quotes this: "Let me impress upon the readers the advisability of buying Irish plants whenever they are procurable, not only from the nationalist principle, but where we can employ Irish hands to work for us, either directly or indirectly, by buying things from Irish farms, we must do so." And so she said, you know, we're talking about guaranteed Irish and buying Irish these days. So less than 100 years ago, not much has changed.
No, you mentioned there Liddell House. And from watching, well, I don't know much about Liddell House, but from watching Nationwide, and sometimes Liddell House would be featured on it. And in particular, as you said there, there's a lovely garden there at Liddell House. They've got a large garden there. But there's a lot of those historical houses. They all seem to have a nice garden, don't they?
Yeah, well, many of them did. Yeah. So again, it would all be down to the owners of the family who owns the house, their particular interest in the gardening. Yeah. And these, they would have been, I suppose, the Anglo-Irish community in Ireland, and many would have had a lot of wealth. Some might have had their interests in other areas, but many of them, there's like Woodstock in County Kilkenny, which is now owned by the Office of Public Works. There's St. Anne's Estate in Dublin in Raheny, where the house is gone, but there's the Rose Gardens remain. And Liddell remained in private ownership and had really kind of fallen into quite a deal of neglect until the current owners bought it a number of years ago. But Liddell, probably of all the gardens, was one of the most famous for the gardeners because they had a nursery which propagated particularly alpine and rockery plants. And there's even plants which are cultivars of them or varieties of them which bear the Liddell name.
Oh.
So it was very famous within within kind of gardening circles in Ireland and Britain, this whole Liddell House. And in the last numbers of years, the garden has been undergoing a restoration. And unfortunately, though, you can't visit it, Johnny.
Why?
No, it's been closed for the last couple of years. I had been there the last year that it was open, which was probably 3 years ago, and it's a fantastic garden. Beautiful setting, got mountains around it, views into the sea. It's got probably one of the largest alpine or kind of rockery gardens in the country, which was being beautifully restored. And the abundance of fruit and vegetables in the walled gardens was absolutely amazing there.
Would you be the type of person, Kieran, that would like to go along to see gardens like that?
Yeah, I mean, we all often do. And I'm not the only one, because there was crowds there on that day. Coaches of foreign tourists. But the gardens are closed now because there's an argument going on over rights of way.
Okay, what about this? We see this on TV a lot as well, the Chelsea Garden.
Chelsea Garden. Well, yeah. That's a big flower show.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's a little bit unreal. For a week, these mad gardens are built. Not only mad gardens, but very beautiful gardens. So it's a very long-running tradition, and probably even kind of the time of Constance Markovic, people from those types of houses around Ireland would have been visiting Chelsea to see the latest plant introductions and gardening implements and things like that. These days, the focus is even more on the gardens and how they're designed. makes better TV, of course, than maybe looking at individual plants. I've been there a long time ago. It was 1995, probably the last time I was at Chelsea Flower Show. Great experience for a gardener, all right. But we do, of course, have one closer to home here in Ireland. We have Bloom Flower Show, which will be happening June Bank Holiday weekend in the Phoenix Park in Dublin.
Okay, I want to ask you something, because I did know it where I live in Castlebar, and Rita would know about this as well. That is, a neighbour of mine was having some, we say, it wasn't a hedge as such running along the side of their house. They were kind of, it's not a hedge as such, it was just but they grew tall.
Shrubs
that get out of hand, we'll say. Well, I won't say the word neglected, because he wouldn't like to hear me saying that, but they got out of hand and they got big and they got bushy and they were kind of obstructing his pathway into the house. So he asked somebody to remove them from this week, which they did, and put in some nice new shrubs. So it opened up the area and it looks absolutely lovely in that. But I'd asked the person that was taking them away, you know, where are you going to dump them? He said, no, I'm not going to dump them. He said, I'm going to use them in my own garden. And the question I'm asking you, is it hard? Or what are the consequences if you take large growing shrubs? Remember, you've got to pull them up by the roots. Yeah. And is it easy to replant them in your own garden? How will they live?
Some plants will, some plants won't. And a lot of it really depends on the plant. And another big factor is how carefully they were lifted, and also the time of year.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so now, for instance, if it's a plant which naturally loses its leaves in winter, it's best that that plant is lifted when it has no leaves.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if it's a plant which has leaves all year round, winter and summer, well, then it's, again, better lifted maybe late winter and early spring. Now, the bigger they are, the bigger the root ball you'll need to get. So you need to take more roots and more soil with them. And that's the hard part. Okay, so you got to get a lot of soil, and then you got to dig big holes, and the transport of them is difficult. But many things can be moved if they're big, and they'll survive. But then you'll need to look after them, water them well and things. Now, sometimes, depending on the plant, it might not transplant well. So certain trees, say like a magnolia, have a reputation for not transplanting well. Other things, if it was, say, like an elder or something like that, no problem. You could dig them up any time, not in leaf, and they'll probably survive. So just some things are tougher than others. So depending on what plants he took up from that, if you like, hedgerow where he planted them, how they were lifted and the aftercare, they may or may not. It might be disappointment, but then
we update this in a couple of weeks' time. We find out, was the growth and was the transplant successful?
Indeed.
Now, can I ask you, I mean, this time of year, I see it myself, the gardens are beginning, people are out there with the lawnmowers, when it's dry, when it's dry, and they're out cutting the grass. I see people putting out lovely hanging baskets. At this time of year, April now, what should people be doing in their garden?
Well, there's lots of things you can be doing. And I'm going to refer back to what Countess Markovitch was writing about in April.
I think you're getting very fond of this woman.
No, it's just interesting. This is, if you like, back at the beginning of the 20th century, 1909, and she was advising people to prune the roses if they haven't been pruned already, which is very good advice. You can prune back your bush roses like the Hypertees and Floribundus down to about 12 inch high stems to an outward facing bud. She says you can plant your dahlias out now, also good advice. But with the frost we're having at the moment, maybe April that year was a milder year, I would maybe hold off on that at the moment. She talks about sowing your 10-week stock flowers. So many of the hardy annual plants could be sown now for transplanting later on. Stock are a lovely plant for giving you a scent on a summer's evening. And then she was talking about all the vegetables, and she was advising people, if you haven't done it already, your main crop potatoes should be got in straight away, getting to the end of the season. And then she was saying about sowing things like broad beans and scarlet runner beans and peas, and you can keep on sowing these every kind of 2 or 3 weeks to get a succession of cropping through the summer months. And then things like beetroots, carrots, cabbage, spinach. April is a really busy time in the vegetable garden. I've only taken some of the list that she has written there, so there's lots of things gardeners should be doing. Cut the grass, feed the lawn, as you're saying, we just put on maybe a fertiliser onto the lawn. Will make it grow quicker, of course, so you'll have to cut it more. That's the downside of that.
Now, I also seen the house this week, and I said to my wife, I said, what's that growing on the window? And she said, it was indoor now, parsley.
Parsley. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, lots of herbs. You can either sow them now, or you might have ones already in pots which are growing. Coriander is another great herb to grow, very easy. And even for people without a garden, they're so easy, many of these herbs, to grow on a windowsill, either inside or outside. A little bit later on, they'll all be able to much happier outside on the windowsill. But
leads me on to the next question. You said happier outside there. And can I ask you, as a professional gardener, Karen, what would be the most what part of the year would you enjoy most when it comes to gardening? Is this the time of year now where you're where you've got a bee in your bonnet and you're planting and you're seeing growth and so on, or what time? Yeah. What time would be? What time of year would be a favourite time of year for gardeners?
Yeah. It's hard. I suppose gardeners will kind of. Most of them might say, well, they like every time of the year. But certainly there's something about spring which has got a great enthusiasm about it. You're seeing things come into growth. The plants are starting to flower. It was also a very busy time of year that if you're not out getting a lot of the work done now, you'll regret it later on. So there's lots of seeds to sow. So, and of course, as with everybody, you'll react to kind of the stretch in the evenings, so you can stay out in the garden longer, and you've got the temperatures warming up. So spring is a great time, but equally summer, when if you get a bit of decent weather and you can actually sit down and relax in the garden for a while, and then autumn with the autumn leaves. Every season is good, but spring is certainly the one which I suppose is the most energetic season.
And finally, any news on the community garden?
Community garden, yes, there will be lots. What's going on in the community garden in the coming weeks? I don't have the exact date yet, but we will be having a mehl with the local GIY group, who are also meeting in Castlebar on Monday evening. I think it's at 7 o'clock. All people with an interest in growing their own food are welcome to attend that.
Okay, I'm just thinking myself, Loch Lanna is a place a lot of people are walking now. Fair play to Mayo County Council. They did an absolutely wonderful job there with the bridge and the walkways in there. And I'm sure they've got plans there for some sort of kind of flower beds and that, you know, to make it all nice. You have the lake there as well and the swans there and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
What would be a suitable, maybe you can't answer this question without research, but then again, knowing the person you are, more than likely you will answer it. What would be a suitable plant, I suppose, when you're near water there and that, and wind and...
Well, it's probably, if it's not so near the water's not going to affect the soil type. So, it's, I mean, if it was wet, you would, things like willows and dogwoods would do very well. But if it's a place where people are walking a lot, and I would love to see local authorities use more plants with scent.
Yes.
You know, so Philadelphus, which is a really tough, wind-hardy, frost-hardy plant, which will have beautiful white blossoms in the summer months, what we call the mock orange. Mm. Beautiful scent. Has that quintessential summer fragrance, which
hard to get.
Fills the air. Very easy to get, very easy to propagate, and cheap plants for them to plant as well. And there's lots of other things, even like some of the rugosa roses, which are really, really tough. And Rita might not like me saying this, but when I try to explain to my students at how tough rugosa roses are, I say they even grow in Belmullet. Belmullet is a beautiful place, but it is very windy and it's very wild. But rugosa roses, and wouldn't matter about any wind off the lake, or that they will still grow really, really good.
Karen, I think that's a great idea. A great idea, and I'm sure the people involved in Mayo County Council, if they haven't thought about that already, there's food for thought now. I mean, you're right, people walking in the lovely Tarmac Adams area, I'm repeating myself when I say it's a credit to them, and people just love there. They walk at all times, evening, night, morning, early morning. There's nice lights there as well. It's fabulous. And I just think to myself, yes, with all the wind there and the wind generating from the lake and so on, yes, a good idea. It would be nice to have those scented...
Lovely waft of fragrance,
Oh, it'd be fantastic. By the way, are there many scented plants that one can get for their own garden, we'll say?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a huge amount of scent. We've brought you in, since we started the programme, plenty of scented plants. And we'll keep on bringing in some more. And, fragrance in the garden. There, at the moment, there's, I think, which is just finishing flower, a plant which has the big name of Osmanthus, beautifully scented, and lots which we can enrich the garden.
Okay, for more information, kieranburke.ie.
On 102.9 FM, this is CRC FM.